Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's June 3, 2013, and this is episode 373. Today we continue a travelogue style account of my recent trip to Namibia with my friend Jeremy Woodhouse and his group. Of my 145 final selects, I did get around to uploading a tighter 100 photo selection to my portfolio's website, and I'll put a link to in the show notes to that later, just so that you can take a look if you're interested. For this episode though, I've selected another 10 favourites to look at. Picking up on the trail, on May 10, we had left the gas station in Aus, where we'd photographed the children that we looked at the end of last week's episode, and we headed due north. And we started then to, I got my first taste of a little bit of Namibian wildlife with this shot of two oryx that posed for us at the side of the road. And this, the tour wasn't wildlife-centric by any means, but it didn't stop me from hoping to capture some shots like this and some of the more adventurous wildlife stuff that we got a little bit later in the trip. Rather than a super action-packed wildlife shot, though, I really just liked this for the humour and composition. I found it quite funny that they both stopped almost parallel to the road, and the one on the left had the bent horn. And then there's also the two bushes in the distance, almost perfectly spaced as though emulating the oryx's positions. As I'd later find, the oryx generally walk away from you when they see a vehicle. So it turns out that we might have been a bit lucky to have had them just pose for us like this as well. As you know, I shoot manual mode a lot, mainly because I shoot in so much in snow scenes, and I just find it easier to take control of the exposure as opposed to messing around with exposure compensation, which I find totally frustrating. Unless you want to overexpose snow though, on purpose maybe, to get a nicely exposed subject like the darker snow monkeys that I shoot so much, once you have your exposure set for the white snow, you can pretty much just forget about it until the light changes. In Africa, where with there being so much more neutral toned in the image, I'd honestly expected to shoot in aperture priority, also using auto ISO, and maybe sometimes tweaking the exposure compensation to keep the histogram over to the right, recording the highest quality pixels with minimum noise. As you can see in this scene though, the light coloured background is really quite bright. And even when it was a darker background, in the end, apart from a few occasions where aperture priority just made more sense, I found myself falling back to what I know and used manual exposure almost exclusively. To keep my histogram to the right, I will still exposing my shots at around, I seem to recall about a 2/3 to even a full stop, and sometimes even higher than the camera's meter thought the scene should be based on an evaluative meter reading. I know that a lot of people say that they prefer aperture priority because it stops them to having to think about exposure, but I really just use less brain cycles working in manual. Moving on though, I like this next shot more for the story that it tells of our journey. During the trip, we travelled hundreds of kilometres on this type of gravel road, and although it's pretty noisy to drive on, our excellent drivers propelled us along these roads at 100 kilometres an hour speeds and more, and I never once felt concerned for my safety. The two plumes of dust that you see in the distance here is a car that had just passed us, and the second car in our party. As we drew close to our lodge for the next four nights, we passed through what would usually have been a waterhole had there been a decent rain this year. But although the lack of rain and waterholes meant that much of the wildlife was scattered around, the vegetation left here had kept a small herd of springbok close by. My first real close-up look at a springbok revealed them to be what I would consider one of the most beautiful antelopes I've ever seen, with their ribbed and beautifully curved horns, long faces and beautiful big eyes. I remember feeling totally happy as I cranked up the ISO to 2500 for this shot, made with the 300mm and a 1.4x extender, and the aperture set at f5 to nicely blur the background. This day had been mostly a travel day to get us close to a beautiful place in the Namib Desert called Sossusvlei. We had 4 nights in the delightful Kulala Desert Lodge. Most of the accommodation throughout the tour was good, but this and the last lodge that we stayed in were by far the best. Although I'd been sharing a room with one of the participants that I hooked up with Jeremy for this tour, I was also pleasantly surprised to find that I had a room to myself here. Well, I say a room, but they were incredibly well-made tents. The windows were just strong netting with canvas flaps on the inside that could be rolled up to let air in and keep cool during the days, or rolled down to keep the cold air out once the sun went down and the temperature plummeted each evening. There was electricity in the rooms and a nice bathroom that all by itself stayed cool during the day and warm at night. And I had a large complimentary yellow gecko living in my bathroom to keep me company for the duration. The main reason for us being in this area was to visit Deadfley, meaning literally the dead marsh, aptly named because a sand dune had blocked the flow of water off to an oasis, leaving a dried up clay pan and a bunch of camel thorn trees to provide a stark foreground for the beautiful orange-red walls of the dunes as the morning light illuminates them before it hits the valley floor. This is the place that Franz Lanting made famous when shooting for the National Geographic. The colour and light contrast between the trees and the dune walls is so great at dawn that people thought Lanting's images were paintings, or at least had been messed with, until he was able to provide a backstory to explain the phenomena. I would end up going back to Deadfley 2 days later, and we'll look at an image showing this better then, but first, from my initial visit, here's a shot showing the sky, dune in shadow, illuminated dune, clay pan in sunlight, and the clay pan in shadow, forming 5 distinct bands of colour highlighting the camel thorn trees. The shadow is made by the large sand dune to the left of me as I face this scene. The first morning was a little bit frantic, as entry to the park is limited and we literally flew along the track down to where we'd parked the car and walked the last kilometre into Deadfley, as the sun was almost in position to start the display. I got some nice shots, but improved on them on my second trip here in a few days, so we'll move on for now. The sand dunes in this area are really quite a sight to be seen. They look pretty cool on the map too, as we can see in this screenshot from the map module in Lightroom. The riverbed is punctuated with the tips of the sand dunes actually looking like an elephant's trunk, and the mouth of the river as it opens up to the right looks like the elephant's face. There's even a little smiley mouth. All it's missing is its tusks, so let's think of this as a happy baby elephant. On this map that we can see, by the way, the area that we're looking at right now is right on the left, and it's marked with a place marker with the number 20 in it. You might have to go to the blog and click on the image to view it at its largest to actually be able to see the numbers, but it's the leftmost marker on the map. The yellow place marker on the map is dune number 12, where I shot this next image. This is close to the tip of the dune with a strategically placed acacia tree composed here to be almost central to the dune. You can see how I also placed the dark cap of the shadow side of the dune directly above the tree here. You can control how much of the shadow you see and where it falls in relationship to the foreground and the tree is basically by moving around back and forth, left and right. And here I was literally taking my ideas for the composition from classic photos of Mount Fuji here in Japan. This is why I subtitled this image Akafuji, meaning basically red Mount Fuji, sometimes seen at dawn and more often at dusk as the light of the sunset hits the sides of the iconic mountain. Centralized or bullseye composition can sometimes look a little bit clumsy, but sometimes it just works, so should never be ruled out as a compositional tool. I've uploaded other shots from this spot to my portfolio site too, and you can see that the amount of shadow to the left and the deepness of the red in the sand is greatly enhanced as the sun hits the horizon. This shot, though, is one of my favourites, as it was early enough that the shadow of that tree was not yet on the face of the dune, which kind of spoils it a little bit in my opinion. As I mentioned earlier, at night the temperature in the Namib Desert drops considerably, to the point that you do indeed need those light down jackets that I showed you in the preparation what's in the bag video that I released before leaving for Namibia. Not only is this a nice change after the almost oppressive heat of the day, but this and the lack of humidity and light pollution presented us with the clearest view of the night sky that I've ever seen. And you can see it here in this photo of the Milky Way. This is a slightly zoomed in shot looking out across the spiral arm of our galactic home made with the 24-70mm lens wide open at f2.8. Although it's visible with the naked eye, once you move away from the lights and turn off your headlamp, that is, I did still have to increase my ISO to 3200 and shoot wide open for 25 seconds to get this shot. The noise with the 5D Mark III isn't worth thinking about at this ISO though, and all I've done to enhance the image is reduce the black slider to minus 12 in Lightroom and added plus 50 clarity to make it pop a little. Note that I chose 25 seconds because this is when the stars just start to elongate a little, but they still look like discs and not a failed star trail shot. These are actually the same settings that I used for 1,000 frames, but this time using my 14mm on three evenings that, basically when we were traveling, they resulted in three roughly 25-second long time-lapse videos of the Milky Way and a few other galaxies that we could see moving across the night sky. I haven't figured out how I'm going to use these videos yet. I'm thinking to use them, or at least one of them, as part of a slideshow of photographs, punctuated with video snippets to present my Namibia experience as a whole, which I'll hopefully get to in the next few weeks. If that takes very long to get to, though, I'll just throw them onto YouTube and let you know before too long. I want you to see these time-lapse videos, though, because they're pretty impressive. After a dawn shoot and breakfast the following day, May 12, a few of us from the group took an hour to climb dune number 17. Although pretty tiring, because you basically slide half a step back for every step forward you take, it was a wonderful experience. I only took my 5D Mark III with the 24-70mm lens attached, but it turned out to be a good choice. I shot this image at 38mm, stopped down to f14 for an 80th of a second at ISO 100. This is one of those shots that I didn't really think much of at first, but since returning home, have fallen head over heels in love with. My initial thinking was to compose this to show the line of the ridge of the dune on which we were standing, but then show how it led to the mid-ground and then the distant dunes, and I included a bit of sky for balance. It wasn't until later, though, that I really started to appreciate this for the textures in the foreground sand and the shadows to the left, and then the leading lines and the texture and tonal variation in the face of the distant dune. Although I worked pretty hard to get up this dune, and we walked right around and then down almost into the basin and then back up around, pretty much destroying the pristine beauty of this dune later, I really didn't appreciate this photo until the emotion of the day had died down. Usually, if we work hard for a shot, we want to like it initially, and then sometimes they just fizzle out. For some reason, this was the reverse. At the end of this day, we shot a different dune, maybe number 11, but no one could say for sure. If you take another look at the map, it was shot to the right of the yellow number 7, which we believe was dune number 12. A little bit further from the road than dune 12, this one presented a slightly different opportunity, with the tree starting to be buried in the sand. As the sun went down, it accentuated the ripples in the foreground, although they were messed up by a tree, or at least the shadow of a tree. The wind got up a little bit too, blowing sand off the ridge of the dune, which is also illuminated by the sun against the darker shadowed background. There was also a beautiful illuminated tip that I placed in the top left of the frame, kind of balancing the image out, with a patch of bright orange in the bottom, both the right side there and this top left corner. Next, here's a shot from the porch of my lodge with the moon rising in the sky with Venus as the last light of another day faded along the horizon. I always find it interesting to see that you can sometimes see part of the moon that is usually dark, especially in such clear skies as we had in Namibia. I played with this scene for a few frames, but found that when I exposed for the bright part of the moon, the part in shadow and the faint light on the horizon disappeared. I toyed with the idea of shooting one image for the bright part of the moon, which would be quite a fast exposure as it's basically just reflected sunlight, then masking it over a second shot, showing the darker part of the moon and the horizon. Then I started to wonder if I could use the brightness of the moon to create a sunburst effect. Because I was shooting at 70mm, I knew that I'd have to stop down some to create that effect, so I went to f11 and increased the ISO to 800 to give me a shutter speed of 8 seconds. And that was basically because I didn't want any longer than 8 seconds, because at this focal length, if I'd have gone longer, I'd have started to see too much movement in the moon. Again, you might have to go to the blog and click on the image to view it at its largest, but the result is a very definite and quite pleasing moonburst, so I was happy with that. The following morning, I got my second crack at dead flay. I'd actually booked on a balloon flight, which I was quite looking forward to, but I hadn't been told that the other option was to return to dead flay, but luckily I was able to cancel the balloon trip and we headed out a good 30 minutes earlier than before, with special permission to get into the park early. I'd studied my images from the previous trip, and although I was happy with them, I had a few ideas that I wanted to work on with my second chance. Remember that I don't study other people's photographs before trips, as I don't want to spend time looking for scenes that would then exist in my head. I did recall the Lantin photo that I'd seen a number of years ago, but my memory wasn't clear enough to spoil my creativity. This time, though, I'd got my visit from 2 days earlier in my mind, and some ideas that I wanted to work on, And I recall spending a quite frantic 20 minutes or so rushing around the clay marsh basin looking for my angle. I'd overthought the scene on my first visit, and I really wanted something very simple. I preferred to have the trees included in the frame and not cropped off, and this can make finding a good spot difficult. I finally settled on a spot that was, in the end, right next to Jeremy, just to the right of him, and I'd found three trees that I could isolate and that had relatively clean background. As you can see in the resulting image, there is a little clump of vegetation on the horizon line and a bump to the right edge of the frame, which I'd have liked not to have been there, but I can live with them. You can see here, though, how the timing is crucial so that you get that line of illuminated sand as the backdrop, but then a perfect line of darker shadowed foreground as at the start of the clay pan. The interesting thing with this composition is that after all my deliberation, when I got home and looked at Franz Lanting's famous shot again, I see that the two left trees in my shot are the two rightmost trees in the Lanting shot. Whether he was aware of it or not, Jeremy was probably shooting pretty much exactly the same shot as Lanting. I haven't seen his resulting photos yet, but I'm curious to see what he came away with. Either way, I'm very happy with the results of my second visit to Dead Flay. I actually have a stash of new breathing colour papers sitting next to me as I record this, and I'm looking forward to making time later this week to profile these papers and print this and a few other favourites from Namibia to see how they look. These are actually new papers and canvases to the breathing colour line, so I'll let you know how they fare once I finish this travelogue series. This episode actually puts us at almost halfway, so I reckon we'll be running for another 2 weeks, possibly three. But I know that some of you missed the travelogue style episodes, so hopefully this is worth doing. I'd also like to mention that the music that we're being played in and out with for these episodes is used with kind permission from the staff of the Kulala Desert Lodge, where we stayed for the 4 days while in the area that we've looked at today. Every other night, they sang and danced and mesmerized their guests. Another amazing experience that I won't forget in a hurry, especially with the help of my iPhone video from which I took the music. We'll sign off for now, for this week, and I'll be back next week as we pick up the trail with a little more wildlife and some photos of the intriguing and beautiful Himba people. Remember, my best 100 shots from the trip are now uploaded to my portfolio site too. If you'd like to take a look, the URL is martinbaileyportfolios.com/Namibia. Thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, etc., and links to everything that I'm up to are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with the third episode in this series. In the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.